Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to Star Wars Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Brian Brushwood.
Hey, man. I don't think that's the name of our show. I think it's Weird Things, isn't it?
Nope. It's Star Wars Things today. Right, Justin? Justin Robert Young?
A long time ago, in a galaxy far, far away, there is Star Wars Things, as it always has been, Brian.
Man, I guess, you know, maybe I'm okay with revisionist history, because I ain't even mad, bro. If that is all we talk about, then that's weird enough for me.
For most of our listeners, what you may not know is we just shared an experience, a joint experience, involved a hotel room, just the three of us.
Mm-hmm. It may have involved a magical coterie of guest appearances that appeared in our hotel room. Can we set the stage on this? We go down to Anaheim, California. We all share a hotel room for Star Wars Celebration. Justin and I are fussing around because we have to do the Night Attack podcast. And we turn around, and all of a sudden, Andrew has, in the first 5 minutes, torn apart the bed sheets and assembled himself like a Jedi costume, complete with a glinting Star Wars lightsaber that is made out of like pieces from the closet that, if you hold at the right angle, will reflect the light of the one lamp in our dingy room. And then we're like, "Oh, that's hilarious." And then we turn back around, and then all of a sudden he's now reconfigured everything. He's dressed top to bottom like a sand person or a bounty hunter. And then we go, we're like, "That's wow, you're really excited." And then we turn back around.
Oh no, I didn't realize, by the way, how accurate that was. I thought that was Andrew just like making himself to be like one of the 9 bounty hunters that you see in that like panning Usual Suspect shot in Empire Strikes Back. But apparently it was so recognizable that people were like naming the character in the chat room. Like Andrew went the whole 9.
But the ultimate was the third time we turned around. He's like, hey guys. And we turn back around and he's taken like all the sheets in the room, wrapped them up. He's taken the coffee cups to make eyes. He's split through the middle, and he's create a life-size Jabba the Hutt out of bed sheets and blankets that he jiggles like a jolly angry Santa and welcomes us to our doom. It was amazing.
And there was the Jawa, too, that tried to sell you the microwave.
There was that Jawa. All right, so I guess we'll just take this first segment, and by first segment, I mean entire show, to talk about Star Wars Celebration and Star Wars in general. So let me just say this, and Brian, I'm curious to know your perspective on it. Now, you'd never been to a Star Wars Celebration. I have a few years ago. I very much enjoyed my time. I spent 3 days there the previous time that I'd gone there. But in my heart of hearts, I really thought that a day would kind of be enough. You know, you go, you see the booths, you buy what you want. You know, the panels are good, but by and large, they're kind of the same panels each celebration. As much as we all love Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher, you know, they will always be interesting. They will always be entertaining. They'll always be worth seeing. But once you've seen them, the necessary drive to see them again, I don't know if it is gigantic. However, this was all before Star Wars, this volcano, which was once just a mountain that we could all pay homage to, became an active volcano again.
Sure.
Which is what happened at this Star Wars Celebration. And as I left L.A., realizing that my 4-day pass was in the hands of Andrew, who would give a few more people a chance to go see the convention, I found myself really bummed out that I was missing other days of this convention, because all of a sudden I feel like Star Wars, and not to say that it's news, right? We knew this movie was coming. We'd seen a teaser trailer before, but Star Wars isn't just an idea anymore. Star Wars isn't just the conversation topic. Star Wars is going to be the dominant sci-fi modern day. This is the most exciting thing in the genre idea for the next foreseeable future.
Do you know what I honestly think? And I'm probably wrong about this, and I'm sure there's a million reasons you can disagree with me. But one of the greatest experiences for me was in the late 80s, early 90s, falling in love with the Marvel universe of characters and all the cross stories. And there were so many major inconsistencies from one comic book to the next. And in fact, they invented in the back bulletins, they would invent a no prize for any time somebody could come up with a minor inconsistency and then explain it away or whatever, right? And then all of a sudden, sort of, once the Marvel Cinematic Universe happens, they sort of sweep all that away. And they're like, we're starting from scratch. This is the story we're telling. You'll see echoes of all these things that you love from all these comics and so on. That has been, like, the most satisfying echoes of my childhood coming back to me. I feel like what we're beginning now is the exact same thing, maybe not on specific storylines, but certainly in the feel and vibe of what we had in the literary world with the Star Wars expanded universe, because I fell deeply in love with the Star Wars books. I read, you know, Tales of the Cantinas, Tales from Jabba's Palace, Tales of the Bounty Hunter, Han Solo Tales, all of the Zahn books, I, Jedi by Stackpole. And I dug this wild menagerie of adventures that could happen in this world. And I was really bummed and hurt when one of the announcements was, everything is not canon except for three movies you like, three movies you hate, and a children's TV show. And it's like, at the time, I was like, ah, that's painful to me. But now that I see where we are headed here, I feel like we're going to get the exact Marvel Cinematic Universe again, and I'm going to get the things I love. Maybe not the exact characters, maybe not the exact locations, but the things I loved about reading the Marvel Cinematic Universe, I, for the first time, have true optimism that the next 10 years are going to be everything I loved about the Star Wars in the books.
We got a very interesting little taste today of what to expect. I mean, Justin and I talked forever about Disney should buy Lucasfilm, and finally when it did, you know, was everything made sense. And then when we knew we were getting new movies, we were excited. And then Bob Iger threw out the, oh yeah, and we'll be doing other Star Wars films, you know, every other year too. And it's like this, what? That we're not just getting a new trilogy, that we're getting other things. And today we got our first little teaser, our first little tidbit of, so this December we get Star Wars Episode 7. We saw that trailer. We'll talk about that in a moment. And then today, they played a teaser. Now, they haven't even started shooting yet, but they assembled a teaser because there's a lot of Star Wars footage and VOs you can use for Star Wars Rogue One, which is next year. Next year, we get a Star Wars film that's a standalone film that takes place before Star Wars A New Hope. And now we're starting to see, as you pointed out, what does this mean? We have the Star Wars 7, which looks like it's part of this legacy. Now we have this Rogue One that looks like the Zero Dark 30 of, you know, what's going on with, you know, in that part of the war, and the idea of, you know, let's tell this very gritty sort of story. And so we're going to get different kinds of stories in this very big universe.
Okay, and can we just contextualize what has happened over the weekend? Because it is something that I did not think could ever happen again. Number one, I feel like fandom in general, and I'm not saying you specifically, dear listener, or necessarily everybody on this panel, but I feel fandom in general is in the spot that they were pre-episode one, which is, how could this be bad? Now, there's a lot more reason for us to think that this is going to be good than we had with episode one. And there is a lot more reason for us to think about it. But I would guess that after this, the disappointment of episodes one through three, that we would have a hardened skepticism that would not allow us to get to the point that we are right now, so far out. But with Rogue One, we even go farther. We are now excited and ready to give an open chance to a Star Wars prequel.
Like, dude,
there is another prequel that we are like, yes, let's see a prequel to Star Wars, and we are excited about it.
I did not even realize that's a good way to put it. I mean, it's I don't even know that it's a prequel. I mean, it certainly is chronologically, but the prequel as they meant it is, this is the story that you were watching you know, sure. what happened before it, right? This
but
to
this
me
this is about the plans to the Death Star.
I mean, that's
this
true. Is, that's true. But yeah. but also, you know, you wouldn't pitch the first Captain America as a prequel to Iron Man. You know, it's a story that took place in the same universe that happened beforehand, right? That's what I feel like this is, and maybe that's the reason they probably made sure not to use the prequel word. But
I don't think that there was any mention. I haven't seen the panel. I haven't seen the panel.
And we wouldn't put, you know, you wouldn't say put Pearl Harbor. I could probably choose a better movie as a Saving Private Ryan. You know, Pearl Harbor is a prequel to Saving Private Ryan.
Right, right. But
you know, Band of Brothers is a prequel.
But
to
this is a great observation in that we have tapped into this gestalt. We have this feeling that we have not legitimately had for 15 years. It has been 15 years since Star Wars fans were this unabashedly wide-eyed and optimistic about a story that takes place before the story. Also, here's what I love about this. Is that there are certain realities, and Disney's very smart about merchandising efforts. They know for a fact that the number one best-selling anything in the Star Wars world is Darth Vader. Darth Vader sells crap, and this is a way for them to make the movie about these heroes doing this thing. But when Darth Vader shows up in that movie, it will not be cheesy or forced or out of place. It'll be a holy crap, Vader's back moment. And
did you watch the Rebels season 2 trailer?
No. Did he show up in there prominently?
Vader's in Rebels is canon.
Oh, that's great.
So, well, when I say this, I don't mean to say, oh, fanboys, whatever. You know, like this is not... This is all at the hard work and decision making and the solid creative stewardship, at least up to this point, of Disney, Kathleen Kennedy, and everybody involved in these stories. Like, they had to earn this trust back. And granted, we want to have them earn it. We are desperate to live in a world where they can earn it back, but they still have to do it. And this weekend has proven that they did.
Dude. Yeah, well, you know, obviously, you know, the proof is in the movies. And the thing that happened, and I think going back to episode 1, Phantom Menace, leading up to it, there was the announcement that George Lucas was going to be making more Star Wars movies. Everybody was electrified. This was an exciting, exciting moment. And there were these questions lingering in the air. You know, he hasn't directed a movie since 1977. You know, there was... You know, the one that we knew his favorite movie was our least favorite movie. And there were all these sort of things. And the closer we got to The Phantom Menace, the less secure we felt. You know, we all wanted it to be great. But it was, you know, when the first, you know, we got the little teaser, like, oh, okay, there's the music. This is Star Wars. This is great. And then we got our first trailer and you're watching, well, okay, maybe this is going to be really fun. Let's give this a chance. And, you know, it was dead for me 10 minutes into Phantom Menace. Am I bored?
Speaking of which, also talking about beliefs in people being destroyed, Justin just casually threw out, by the way, the announcer during the pod race, the two-headed monster, that's Greg Proops. Greg Proops, who I deeply respect and who I love his work on Whose Line Is It Anyway? And he's hilarious when he shows up on Armintown. And I'm like, no. Greg Proops wouldn't do that. That's not true. That's impossible.
No. Greg Proops was delighted to cash that check. You know, when they came to him. This is a remarkable kind of moment, and specifically compared to those episode one days when you first saw the trailer, I was electrified by the episode one trailer. I thought that, like, it was great. But looking back on it, it was all iconography. Excuse me. It was all just like, oh, look, a planet. There's a spaceship. Here's a lightsaber. There's Jedi Knights. A geisha? Oh, I don't know. I guess it looks kind of cool. Like, oh, look, it's another planet. That's insane. It was all just overload. To compare that to
And by the way, I'm in the same group as you. I bought the hype into it, and I was part of the confused masses that didn't know how to feel.
I was drinking the Kool-Aid, guys. I'm drinking it, but I'm like, case. Just ignore it. Just ignore it. My tongue's numb. No, just ignore it. Just ignore it. You're don't ruin it. But it was just going back. It's like, well, yeah, there are all these little things. And just finally, just, you know, when we're sitting there and you're watching the beginning of Phantom Menace and the scroll goes by and then they're like, well, the trade negotiator. I'm like, oh God, this is not good. I just like, you know, I'm like 10 minutes. I'm like, I have a bad feeling about this.
Well, you know, we got it was a really interesting lesson because especially in the How Star Wars Conquered the Universe book, it does a great job in encapsulating that moment in time before episode one, where the real pervading thought was, how can there be a bad Star Wars movie? Mm-hmm. We do not know of bad Star Wars movies. The Star Wars movie that's the most controversial is still insanely watchable, you know?
If you just say, leave the question at that, it's fine. But then you go like, well, how good was the Ewok adventure really?
Yeah, look, I'll go to bat with Jedi. I liked, to me, and this is kid Brian talking. This is college, you know, early 90s Brian arguing. Jedi had some genuinely remarkable moments when, like that moment when you get the barest hint that there's a human inside the Darth Vader mask, and he's like, "It's too late for me, son."
As
like,
a kid, Jedi was my favorite.
Yeah, exactly. And the introduction of Jabba, which by the way was what was so dumb about introducing him in a weak way and the special
edition. Yeah, because you really meant to have you were gonna magically insert using 1976 technology him into that scene. Sure.
But man, I remember being terrified and intimidated. This guy is pure evil and has so much power that he's allowed his body to become whatever this thing is. I mean,
oh my God. Well, he's a warlord. Like he is you know, take that scene, take everything in Return of the Jedi and make him an African warlord in some remote town.
Sure.
And it plays like, you know, and make it a pack of jackals instead of a rancor and have a, you know, somebody be tranquilized instead of carbonite, you know, dude. Like,
well, and plus also, you know, freaking, after being in the wild, having no idea what happened to Luke, he shows up dressed in black and just starts force choking people. Like, I mean, I don't know that I will make a case. There was a time that my legitimate favorite order was Empire, below that, slightly below that, Jedi, and then least favorite was the original.
Wait, Andrew, correct me if I'm wrong, but when you said how good was the Ewok adventure, like, are you meaning like the Ewok adventure movies, the standalone?
Oh, I thought you were just bagging on Jedi.
No. I loved Ewoks, Jedi was my. No, I literally meant the TV movies when Lucas had control.
Got it.
Yeah. It's so the question was, yeah, the question of like, could there be a bad Star Wars movie? We'd seen them. Like Lucas had made bad Star Wars movies.
So let's for those of you who were not fortunate to be there, night before, you know, we're all giddy, you know, hotel room playing Star Wars, and then go to sleep and in our own beds, mind you. Okay,
we did. We upgraded to the suite of the Castle Inn,
so that I could sleep on a couch. It was delightful.
You were offered a bed, Brian.
It was a pullout couch. It was, you just weren't sleeping on a couch.
So we wake up the next day. Now we decide, because like we went the night before, we went to go look at the line. We went to go look at the line because there is a breed of humanity. There is a breed of person. They have something in them that I do not have in me. I don't think we have in, like, we might wait out for lines for certain things.
I was about to say, I have it in me. It depends on what the thing is. I definitely had it in me for the release of one of my sweetest memories was waiting in line for the iPhone. And the longer I could wait, the happier I was. The very first one.
No, I agree. I think that also, but because we knew, you know what? We can sleep and then we can watch the same thing everybody else saw, but in kind of like closer up.
We sort of had this post 30-year-old set of realizations, like, hey, we could wait in line or we could sleep in a bed. And we're like, yeah. And we're like, and then we woke up, we're like, hey, we could go fight to get in the last overflow room, or we can use the 100 megabit internet that this awesome hotel has and just watch it right here in the suite.
We had our own overflow room a block from the convention center wherein we enjoyed the presentation
of
the trip.
So we watched the opening presentation, right? And we're watching this high speed. It's beautiful. We got it. Justin put it up on the big TV using his setup. And then they get like, and now this Force Awakens trailer. And it goes, feed over.
And yeah, it says, thank you for watching the feed.
And Justin turns to us like, well, I guess we're not going to get to see it. You know, and we had this sort of like, we chose poorly. You know, we're like, I'm like, no, it's going to go. It's going to go up because it's going to go. They don't want to pirate a cop. It's going to go up there. We're like, well, no, like maybe we should just go to the convention. And maybe.
And then like 2 minutes after that.
So I start the ECW, we effed up. We effed up, Chad. And then all of a sudden I see, because I'm on the Daily Tech News Show Slack room, I see Tom and Jenny from Daily Tech News Show and Roger talking. They're like talking about things that seem to be indicating that they are watching the trailer. And I'm like, what? And just like, oh, go to the YouTube.
Yeah, I'm on my phone. I go, oh, youtube.com/StarWars. Go. And he's like, faster. You know, he's like, takes him 3 seconds to get there. And I'm screaming at him to do this.
Yeah, it was amazing. It was amazing. And it was everything that we wanted.
Trailer thoughts.
Yeah, let's back up before we do and talk about the masterful. I mean, this was, I'm not going to say quite a Steve Jobsian level presentation, but the way they managed, here are the heroes of the trilogy that you want to see. Here is a legion of stormtroopers wearing the new armor that's unveiled. Here are the genuinely charming, wonderful cast that you're now going to fall in love with. I thought they did a fantastic job of getting us ultimate hype machine, man. The pacing was great.
Well,
but I mean, the ultimate moment was, here's R2-D2. Yeah, we're all supposed to clap for R2-D2. Seen him for 30-something years. And it's like, here's a real-ass rolling BB-8 just waltzing out on stage. I freaked out, man.
Oh, my God. All right, so... Look at how that presentation was layered, because I think it was very deliberate. We see, you know, whatever the Entertainment Weekly host doing his own, you know, opening act thing. Kathleen Kennedy, J.J. Abrams, the overseer of the entire franchise, the creative drive behind Episode 7. Then we get the original cast. So let's look at this. That they are deliberately being introduced in order of their importance to how you are supposed to relate to Episode 7 and the franchise in general. You have the creative layer. You have the actors, the new actors, who are going to be the main drives of this new trilogy. Then you have the stormtroopers. Then you have the droids, including BB-8, who is a huge, gigantic pop for the crowd and for everybody else who's watched. And then...
Yeah, by the way, the BB-8 coming out is a fantastic magic trick. I still don't understand how they did it. I suspect magnets are involved, but that's all I got.
Yeah, there's an explanation online that's way overly complicated. They're like, well, because it's like the company that they went to, Sphere, was actually part of the Disney Accelerators, and I know somebody who, you know, associated with that. But I had an RC globe back when I was a kid that was like rolled around, and how the dome floats on top. It's amazing. But I mean, it's as a magician, you go, okay, well, do this and this, and you have that effect. But what's funny, when the first teaser came out, people saw that and like, well, that's CG, and you know, there's no way they're doing that practical. And I'm sure probably in the trailer was CG, but Abrams like, no, we're going to do as much practical, and there we have a practical robot that rolls around, and that half hemisphere stays on top.
But I'm sorry to get back to your breakdown, Justin. This is when we jump over to the biggest pop.
So we get BB-8, R2-D2, BB-8, and then last only to the trailer is Mark Hamill and Carrie Fisher. So as to say, this is about nostalgia. You love this because you love Star Wars. You want to see more adventures because you have loved previous adventures. And we are going to do right by these characters. We are going to continue to tell their stories, and we're going to be respectful of it. But they are the flavor to this other narrative that we are taking very seriously, and we want to be as magical as the original trilogy. And wrapped in the confidence of J.J. Abrams, that panel was just, you just felt in control. There was so very few times, including that teaser, when you kind of had a, which we got so used to with George Lucas, right? Yeah. We like, just like every time that we would want to buy in, there is just one of those like, well, you know, like I really felt like the Ewoks are, you know, the most popular thing about Star Wars. And you're just kind of like, well, okay. I like the Ewoks, right? But like, you know, okay, I guess.
Did he actually say that?
I mean, it just in that, I mean, he's talking
right,
about
right. In that vibe.
Jedi
in that semi-diluted or out-of-touch space, yeah. Okay, then we get to the trailer where
Andrew, did you have any thoughts about the presentation that you wanted to bring up?
It was a perfect execution of that. I mean, it was just this, you know, in the magic community, we know JJ because JJ's big into magic. JJ's really collects magic, knows magic, very much into it. His whole, if you've never seen his TED talk called The Mystery Box, go watch it. It's about being a magic nerd and all that. And so a lot of friends in common and stuff, you know, and behind me a deck of cards and a collaboration he did with one of our buddies. So he's really into that world and he gets it. And BB-8 was the showmanship side of JJ. JJ is a showman, not just in his movies, the way he does things around. I don't always agree with some of the ways, you know, it's not con, you know, kind of things. But he's going to put a hell of a lot more thought into this stuff. And seeing Kathleen Kennedy up there and understanding that partnership was great. Because I'm like, with JJ and Kathleen, who worked with Spielberg, has worked with the greatest, you know, the greatest filmmakers there's ever been, who's had a history with amazing franchises, who's a very sharp, smart producer. I just felt so good watching that team versus, you know, I love George Lucas, and I think Rick McCollum was an amazingly capable producer for like the young Indiana Jones Chronicles, what they're able to pull off on that, the budget they did and all that. But you realize that, you know, Lucas, when he did the Star Wars trilogy, you know, the first one, he had, you know, some other really sharp people, Brian De Palma, Francis Ford Coppola, and other people, and his wife at the time going, well, George, maybe not.
Well, which, by the way, I mean, it was, and you get this, and we've plugged it before, we talked to the author, but how Star Wars Conquered the Universe really makes it clear that that George had a fairly low, I don't want to say low key, low stakes idea, a fun thing he wanted to do. And he fell in with a group of people, each of which so exquisitely talented that what came together surpassed the expectations of everybody in every possible way.
And what we've seen, the reason Marvel has succeeded so wonderfully so, which we were all extremely nervous about, is you have Kevin Feige at the top there who is calling shots, and he's got a great team of people. Kathleen Kennedy, great person at the top. You know, Disney was thrilled that she was going to be head of Lucasfilm to be able to run this for them. She brings in J.J. Abrams, who has done, you know, is an amazing creator, done wonderful things, loves this stuff passionately. They're building this great team of people there, and they're putting together. And Rogue One came from – Rogue One, the plot idea, by the way, do you hear where that came from? John Knoll. John Knoll, inventor of Photoshop and one of the early ILM guys.
No kidding.
Also created the lens flare, but we'll forget about that. So they already have this in-house team of people at Lucasfilm who've worked around, who've been in that world, who are contributing. So you've got a brain trust working on this, and not just – well, this person knows the archivals. Like, you've got really creative people who've done things in their own right, who've already established themselves and their separate identities as creators, are now contributing to this. That is what thrills me. And seeing up there Kathleen Kennedy, like, I felt great. Like, man, she's gonna make sure this franchise, the series, is handled the way it is, and JJ's gonna contribute. We're gonna other people contribute. I'm excited. So that's what I thought.
Okay, so we do want to talk. People are already sending me screenshots of our Periscoped adventure through the exhibit that we went to. But let's
break this down. Day before, there's the thing goes up, and I think it was on Slash Film. Our good friend Pete Shiretta, SlashFilm.com.
I'm sorry to pause this real quick. I just want to do one more thing to touch on the presentation before we get into what we saw afterward.
Sure.
Fair game. the shade that JJ threw on George Lucas. The quote was, it was really remarkable. And a question about building physical sets, which is dog whistle for, I'm dying to shoot this all on a soundstage.
By the way, he's done a number of this, because you remember he did the same thing where, like, yeah, I've been thinking about it, and it seems like I should shoot this on film, not digital. That's just what I feel like it should be film, like the original trilogy was.
This is playing to the constituency, right? But it is an anti-prequel constituency. He then makes a point to say that you can understand the plot to this movie when he cut a rough cut together before he sent it to ILM. In hindsight, I think Andrew and I were talking, the one thing you could say about the presentation is you don't got to go full Scientology where you unveil a full portrait of George Lucas and everybody salutes. But it might have used just a minute in a moment of Star Wars renewal that everybody could pause and say, hey, this is the legacy of one great man's imagination. Was it missing that, and was that too much in your guys' opinion?
No. Okay. First of all, this is a series of dog whistles. First was mentioning film. Second was saying, you know, we're going to use a lot of practical effects and puppetry. And then third, the biggest dog whistle was that Jim Henson creature creation during the charity video that he did. And then the final one was, we built giant sets because we think it helps actors to see the thing that they're up against rather than have to imagine it. I think all of it.
Smash cut to Ewan McGregor in his living room. Come on! Really?
Now? I think he's done a very good job of being respectful and yet also giving what I think are genuinely important winks and nods to that effect. Like, there was a wound. There was a hole in the heart of the diehards, and it needs to be patched. And little things like that, I think, massage it. And, I mean, ultimately, it'll be the quality of the movie that brings everybody back. So I'm not really worried about that.
You know, when BB-8 rolled on stage, it was a great thing to say Star Wars is real. As a kid, I remember going to a department store to go meet Darth Vader, which does sound really perverse.
Dude, I went to Kroger and saw an R2-D2. It was amazing.
Yeah, that was what we loved, was the idea that you could go see them. From the prequels, you couldn't go see none of that. You know, there was none of that I could go see in person, you know, and that was an exciting sort of thing to do that. So I want to touch upon something else. So I have paid for the last three Star Wars celebrations to go to, right? First one I paid for, I didn't get to go to. Ended up going, I found something more nerdy to go to, which was the Singularity Conference. Second one, the one before that was in Orlando, I went to that. I got to see Kevin Smith's talk, which was great. It was amazing. One of his best talks ever. And then this one. Every one of those Star Wars celebrations, I bought tickets in advance hoping this was going to be the one that they were going to announce a new trilogy. They're going to announce new Star Wars films. And I talked to Justin.
At least a new TV show. That was always our hope, is that this was the TV show announcement.
I mean, I would talk Justin to every time. Like, it might be the one where we hear the TV show. It might be the one. This could be it. If they're going to do a trailer or something, we want to be there. And then, you know, the first one, it's like, it's fun, but no. Second one, you know, no, and I actually, the second one, I got really depressed because I was went there, and the only new property they had was the robot chicken was gonna do Star Wars.
Oh my god, detours, Star Wars detours.
I love the robot chicken.
I do too.
Stuff. Love that stuff. But when I walked into a hall, and the only new Star Wars thing they have is an entire series that just lampoons the Star Wars. I was nothing about Shinrike
they're talented writers, they're geeks like us. They clearly love the original trilogy as much as we do, but good God, we just don't want to hear jokes about cinnamon buns hairdos.
I was so depressed because they said this is how a franchise dies. This is a dying franchise. Clone Wars had some great elements to it, but then like, what's intergalactic banking? Bro, 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 bro. I was just, is this it? Is this, we have to wait for Lucas at some point to just, you know, when he passes away, you know, let Jet Lucas take it over or sell. I mean, it was just 20 years away, whatever. I was so depressed.
One more thing. Can I say if I had to pick like one thing that must not change, like a genie says, I'm going to go back in time. I'm going to change a whole bunch of things about that presentation and about everything they announced. There is one thing you can insist stays the same. And I'd be curious what you guys pick would be from this genie. But my one thing is it was this wave of relief when I found out that the desert planet wasn't Tatooine. It's a new planet, Jakku. And I was just like, yes, because it's a big universe, because that's what we love about Star Wars.
Well, Brian had two rules going into this, though. Brian said two things. Like, I don't want Darth Vader. I don't want Tatooine. You know,
and I got both. I win.
Oh, what did we see at the very beginning, though, Brian? There's a mask.
I'll look at his sorry ass corpse. I mean, look, let us remember the fallen, you know,
real quick before we move on. Could there have been a moment? Is the presentation as great as it was lesser because there was not just a hey, y'all, let's give it up for George moment?
Yeah.
It would have been nice. I think it would have been good. But it would have felt obligatory either way. So we only notice it in its absence.
We want it to happen, let's say, next year's celebration, which would be the touchdown dance celebration for how, you know, gigantic Star Wars
and
Episode 7
and
was.
And he's been super supportive. He's like, you know, he was praised for the first trailer. He says he hasn't seen it. He said, as of yet, he says, I haven't seen the latest one yet. I want to watch it in the theater. He says, I'm excited to be able to see this, you know, as a fan. And so he's been very cool about that, given how much shade he's been thrown by everybody. So every celebration, it's like, oh, maybe this. And then finally, Disney announces, we're buying Star Wars. And you go back to like our podcasts on that and our geek elation to that. And now we're seeing this sort of stuff. And this is the first Star Wars celebration in the United States where we actually get it. We know going into this, like, are we going to get a trailer? And I have like insiders telling me like, yeah, there's going to be a trailer. I've heard that before from people like in other productions who are like literally as close as you can imagine who were wrong. So I'm like, well, let's hope and hope it's just not a little 4-second teaser of a teaser. They're like, are we going to get a trailer? Are we going to get this? What's going to happen? And then we watch this. We get our effing trailer, which is amazing. There are tears in our eyes and it's everything. And my favorite quote was Riley, who does the Star Wars podcast, talked about in the media room. They were shouting, these are all the media people. These are all the media people covering this. As soon as the trailer ends, they start shouting,
Perfection.
Really? That's great. And of course, that's Riley Blanton, friend of the show. Fantastic.
From Star Wars Report. Star Wars Report and Forcecast. We ran into both those guys, Eric Geller from Forcecast and Riley from Star Wars Report. Download both of those like I did because now I have full Star Wars churn.
So, as long as we're giving high signs to friends of the show that were involved with everything, I think Anthony Carboni did a fantastic job.
Oh, yeah.
Still doing a good job.
Yeah, he's still there. Like, he's in the trenches, man.
Slaying it, man. He's doing a great, great job. And he is under tremendous pressure because, of course, he wants to speak extemporaneously. He's a comedian. So there's places he wants to go. And he's constantly, you know, there's questions that are and aren't off limits that he doesn't really get to know. And you know, he's here just random ass orders in his IFB and just handling it all with aplomb. It was great seeing Peter Serretta from Slash Film and running into Dan Trachtenberg, who was there. I don't know if I could say why he was hanging out with all the bad robot guys. I don't know if that's public.
No, he's announced that he's directing.
He's directing a bad robot movie, and so it was cool to
talk. He's already finished principal photography. I think it's Valencia is the code name.
Oh, good. I only had a few seconds, but it's like I just want so bad to buy him a drink and ask what it's like to be a fan of Star Wars, to be on the bad robot team, to be close, but at the event as part of the team, but it's not really your event. So it's like you just get amazing inside access, I assume.
He says you're walking through Bad Robot, you'll be walking through, and you're from a suite, you'll start hearing these orchestral swelling, you know, and you know, inside there. But again, everything's on like such lockdown. There are a lot of people Bad Robot. No, they're just as in the dark as we are about stuff.
God, that's got to be
so
fun.
So celebration. So we know now we get the teaser. Now we get to see a great trailer that's everything we could have hoped for about the next one. Like to the point, like I don't want to see anymore. I just want to see this. Then they did something so wonderful. The day before, it got leaked. They said, "Hey, there's an exhibit hall labeled Star Wars Force Awakens exhibit." I'm like, what's this? We rush over to the convention center, hit the floor, then we go upstairs and we get into this line. And by the way, you thought that line was long when we were there, guys, on Thursday? You should have seen it on Saturday, okay? That line wrapped entirely around that room, down the hall, and all the way across almost to the end of the convention
center. No kidding. Oh, man, we won the lottery.
Here, oh, my God.
And just real quick meta moment was how savvy, how 21st century that they were able to say, please don't touch anything. Take all the photos you want. Feel free to post them or whatever. It was like, it was so cool. And it wasn't until halfway through I took a photo here, photo here.
Well, let's back up.
Oh, okay.
So we don't know. Like, all we know is we're saying, but we don't know what's going to be inside there. And it could, you know, it might be like some standees or something. It might be like a costume or something. Like, we don't know what we're going to see. And
pictures,
what
stills, you know.
What's that?
Yeah, like, I mean, it could stills. Be pictures, stills, yeah.
Concept art,
like Leia's pills. So the door opens, and I grab Justin or Brian. I'm like, guys, look, we can see like something in there, right? Because I'm getting excited. Like, we see something in there. We see like the back of like a stormtrooper, whatever. All of this is stuff. Now, if you follow the stuff like the leaks and stuff, there's a lot of leak stuff and there's a lot of fakes. But officially speaking, nothing has been out there other than a cast photo, a teaser, and now the trailer and all that. So there was stuff in there that had never been officially released. And so we get on this line, it's maybe an hour, and then finally, you know, they're letting groups of people in, they open up this door, and then we get to be among the first people to ever see the stuff that's in The Force Awakens. And there's, you know, arguably spoilers, there's descriptive text, there's things like there are things I had never heard of or didn't know or whatever. And many people who are like, well, this was in the fan stuff. Yeah, there was, but a lot of it wasn't known and was, you know, conflicting information. So now we're in the room. Guys, go ahead.
Okay, so first of all, walking in the room, and it's a small room. It's a single room where they just have, and the first thing you see is a little miniature model of you know, I think a modified X-Wing fighter, you know, with blue stripes on it. You see a Millennium Falcon in there. And it's like, you know, I've been to the Smithsonian exhibit.
With the new radar dish.
What's that?
The new radar dish.
Oh, yeah.
The new radar dish.
Okay,
yeah.
Good point. And then you see the outfit for who I guess is our protagonist, right? What's his name?
Finn.
Yeah, well, Finn. Finn is our protagonist. And you see both the costume he's wearing, but sharp-eyed observers have noticed that he's wearing a lightsaber, which nowhere in the presentation did they say he's training to become a Jedi or whatever. We only see him in a stormtrooper outfit. Mm-hmm. And here he is holding a lightsaber. Not only that, but according to some sharp-eyed observers, it looks like the exact lightsaber Luke lost at Bespin, right?
Yep.
So, I mean, in the second teaser, we did see him out of the stormtrooper outfit. And remember the first teaser, you know, there's been awakening in the Force, and we see him. So we know there's things they're telling us like this, and there was a plot line that got leaked a little bit too much about what it could be, which still doesn't seem to tell us anything.
And we see what looks to be that lightsaber in the second in the teaser trailer that debuted this week.
We have the Luke VO handing it to Leia.
I just want to say real quick, it was neat. To make it a little more weird things talk, it was neat that halfway through being there, I realized that we had explicit permission to take photos, and, you know, Periscope and Meerkat are the hot new jam now. So I just click a button, and within, you know, 30 seconds, there are 200 to 300 people watching me take them on a tour and sharing this. And I think that's exactly the kind of experience they wanted. And people were...
Well, they did say no video, but still...
They did say no video?
Yes.
I might have violated a thing then. That's interesting. I mean, is a live stream video? I guess by definition it
no,
is.
No, Brian, totally not video.
At any rate, it was a very, very cool exhibit, and it was very cool to have that moment.
But to Andrew's point, this kind of felt like, and this was an experience that I never had, because Star Wars was an established franchise. I was born the same year that Return of the Jedi came out, but I always hear these tales of, you know, oh, I opened up a magazine or I saw just toys and saw all of these just words and names of planets that, you know, were so fantastic, and the franchise had gripped me so that all I could do was imagine my own adventures with all these little scattered stray pieces of information. And walking through this museum quality exhibit, that's all I could feel, was like all of a sudden you're just reading things like Resistance and First Order and BB-8 and random characters with lightsabers, and it's just like, or flame troopers, which obviously have been a part of Star Wars canon, but not in front of you. And Kylo Ren, who just looks like this perfect blend of Sith Lord and Doctor Doom, and to see the Rey concept art, which just looks like this amazing blend of Han Solo and Princess Leia that doesn't feel pandering or cheesy. It was just an amazing experience.
Well, and I'm so glad to hear you point that out, because for slightly older generation, me and Andrew, like, this was how we experienced the hype from the new movies, was we got the toys first wondering who they were or what that meant. And it's like, I can't wait to find out what these Ewoks are for, or, you know,
Boba Fett. I bet she's going to be a major character throughout the whole movie and is going to be, you know, not die like a bitch.
Yeah. Yeah. But it's like, I didn't even care. It's like we were sold the world, and then the movies were fulfillment. By the way, one of my favorite moments was when I walked up to the new stormtrooper or snowtrooper outfit. I walked up, and it was very cool to glance just at the helmet and say, wow, that really looks like a snowtrooper outfit. And like, yeah, no, this seems very inspired by the snowtroopers. And then look down and then see that he's standing in snow, and then see that it clearly is labeled snowtrooper. But it's like there's this vernacular to this world that we now speak, you know?
Absolutely. That it was such a wonderful moment, as you pointed out. They let the fans be the first ones to get the photos out. Let the fans be the first ones to see this, rather than, I mean, there's going to be all sorts of Entertainment Weekly stuff, all sorts of things coming out there. But, you know, the reward was you get to be there first. You get to see this. We get to see props. We're part of it. We got to see BB-8 up close. You got to see these things. It's real. Star Wars is real to me. I mean, it's, you know, we watched the Kylo Ren's lightsaber. Okay, which they point out is a 3D print, by the way.
Aww.
And you see that's the not totally not controversial lightsaber with the cross guard there, and you see that up close, and it's this nasty, gnarly looking thing.
Oh, it looks like a pipe bomb.
Built out of anger, you know, and you see it up close, good. And it's like it makes sense that, you know, Johnny Ive was the one that said make the lightsaber spitty, and you look at this thing and you go, oh my God, this is nasty. This is awesome.
Yeah, it really was. And it was awesome. It was as though we were teleported above a spaceship and allowed to see artifacts from another world and then transported back to Earth. And I'm sure that was exactly their intent. They did a wonderful job. My only regret was that I was only able to be there for half a day. Tell me what you guys got to experience after I left.
Well, you know, we went to Tatooine.
I know you guys got to sit on the freaking amazing cantina set.
As I'm sure you'd be able to see right now if you're watching this live, don't switch over, but just trust us that Anthony Carboni and the fine folks that are doing the live stream on StarWars.com, another super smart thing for them to do is to not just lock this down to a, yup, you got to be there. That's why you got to buy a... That's why you got to buy a ticket. But to have a live stream experience so people can understand it at home, they're shooting on a cantina set, which we were explained was built by Chris Hardwick and the Nerdist Industries to do a short movie or something, and then was sold back to Lucasfilm at the price of a big charitable donation. This is built to as close to spec as the original one was, the original set was, as possible. It looks fantastic. It was just a giddy dream to be on there and walk around, because this is all roped off, and this is, I mean, obviously a little, you know, name droppy, look at us, you know, kind of stuff. But it was just an amazing experience to just casually be talking to your friends on in the no greater hive of scum and villainy, the cantina on Tatooine.
That's so great, man. Well, congratulations, and congratulations to everyone over at Disney and Lucasfilm for, by all accounts, nailing it. Oh, real quick, I know you guys aren't gamers, but I got super stoked about the Battlefront stuff.
It's amazing.
DICE, of course, does the Battlefield franchise, which is one of my favorite multiplayer games. In fact, I was heavy into Battlefield 2 and Battlefield 1942. As the weaponry got more realistic and more advanced, it felt too twitchy to me in a way that made it less fun for me. And the idea that they're going to do essentially that kind of game, as I understand it, but in the Star Wars universe, and by the way, if you could throw the footage up there, I'll show it after we take a moment to thank the people who make possible weird things. Right, Andrew?
Sure, I'm sorry. I was just looking at photos of Slave Leia Elsa cosplay combination.
Tell me that's a thing.
It was a thing, God. I saw.
Oh my God.
Well, here we go. Yeah,
you're like, Patreon. Man, these guys talking about Star Wars. I'm sure they talk about weird things too. I'd like to hear them talk more about weird things in Star Wars. Well, you can make that happen by going to Patreon. That's patreon.com/weirdthings. And you can get our Weird Things weird list, where we sporadically send out very weird things we find throughout the week. You can help us reach our goal of being able to do extra podcasts throughout the week. You'll also find out more about our After Things podcast. That's the podcast we do after this, where we talk about what it's like to be a creative person trying to find your way and create and develop and, you know, just make your way in this crazy galaxy. And it's considered by some people to be the best thing we do.
By the way, we are only 48 patrons from a half century, from 500. And more importantly, we are $3.40 away from being $666 an episode. Not only is that a hilarious number, but it's 2/3 of our way to our primary goal to make this regular and keeping us loud, live, and independent. Thank you to all you guys. But seriously, take a look at the Star Wars Battlefront.
And this is all from the game engine. This is all generated by...
Wait, no, this isn't. Wow, this is the first one. Wow, Neshcom did me wrong. Wow. Neshcom got me some old stuff. Yeah, this is generated in the game engine. Now, if you know anything about the way trailers are put together... they use the game engine, but oftentimes they'll render it offline. So, you know, because your mileage will vary based on your system. But it's brilliant. It looks like, there you go. It looks like the reenactment of the battle on Endor. And you could tell that they're building into the fighting experience. Like, there ought to be a speeder chase ability. And of course, if you played any of the Battlefield games, there's usually a tank or something you can get a hold of to give you a temporary power boost. And then usually there's countermeasures. You know, somebody will have an anti-tank weapon and take it back. And so in this case, looks like you can grab yourself an AT-ST, and yet somebody else can use an anti-tank kind of weapon on you. A full AT-AT shows up, and then you're able to call in airstrikes with Y-wing fighters from the Rebels. This is everything I loved about that game in a universe I love even more. I am super, super excited. Anyway, that's all I got to say.
You know, people probably will not look good when you actually play. True, but considering how many quarters I popped into Star Wars Trench Run vector graphics.
Yeah, don't care.
with the canned audio, Luke, use the Force.
They do seem to indicate that occasionally, like big heroes, at some point they call in Darth Vader. My guess is those will be non-playable characters that show up when you get... in certain places. Then you see a desert landscape. You see a Hoth-like landscape. Just looks amazing. I'm super,
super into it. So one thing that's cool, too, is that in there, one of the games is it's going to be the Battle of Jakku, which at a certain point, Star Destroyer crashes and X-Wings crash and all that, and many, many, many 30 years later or so, show up in Force Awakens.
Yeah. Well,
you guys,
I would imagine.
Hear the Iger comments about the theme park?
What?
So, rumor has it, we've heard whispers, our original reporting here on Weird Things, we've heard whispers that Disney is quietly marking off territory for a Star Wars theme park. Bob Iger lent credence to that over Star Wars Celebration, wherein he said that initial planning was fairly underway when he took a look at it and said, you want to know what? We got to hit the reset button on this. This is too focused on the original trilogy.
Wow.
And as big as these new movies are going to be, we want them to be far more representative of all of the new films and the new lands. We don't want people to see the new movies, get excited about Star Wars, come to the Star Wars theme park and be like, this isn't what I saw in the movies.
Right.
They want to have Star Tours, which is currently running in both Disneyland and Disney World.
But that's why, Star Tours is built modularly to where you get randomized adventures, so they could easily fold in new content.
Well, no. They want that to be the representative of the original trilogy. And there might, obviously, they're still playing with iconography of the Death Star and Darth Vader in the currently produced stuff. So you will probably see that represented in the new stuff.
Yeah, he'd said at a previous shareholder meeting, he said that, we're not going to announce plans for the park because we don't want it. It's so heavy, based on the new stuff, we don't want it to be spoilery.
Yeah.
Yeah. I guess this was the first time that I had heard that was a conscious decision that they had laid out plans for a Star Wars theme park that you would make as soon as you got the license for it and then had kind of hit the reset button, which who knows how much of that is him installing his own
myth-making. They're moving, they're relocating, and this is at the Disney Hollywood Studios area, which probably Hollywood Studios is going to get a rename. They're relocating substantial parts of the of a lot of the stuff that's not park-related services to off-property to make room because they're taking over it. They've got a lot of room there. They're taking over a tremendous amount of that park, actually destroying, raising buildings and stuff like that to build that whole expansion. So that'll be several years in development. But
do you guys want to talk picks?
Yeah, dude.
All right, let's do picks.
I guess before we begin, I just want to high five and thank Andrew Main for recommending Becoming Steve Jobs. It was really good. I just finished it last night, and I liked the fact that it was so self-aware. It didn't present itself in a bubble. It was, in many ways, a response to the previous Steve Jobs, Walter Isaacson, Steve Jobs biography. It portrays Steve Jobs as a infinitely human, and I don't want to say flawed, but just a human character who they do a lot of pointing out mistake after mistake he made early on and what he did to do right early on, and what you're left with is a person who, if there's something you mourn, you see so much growth in Steve Jobs through all the stories, and these are first person reporting. You hear from Michael Dell, you hear quotes from a lot from Bill Gates. This guy had access, he knew him for 20 years. There's two authors. One of them, it's written in the voice of one of the authors though. And you are left with the story of somebody who really was hitting his stride, and act two was phenomenal of Steve Jobs. And when it ends, it's heartbreaking that you'll never know what the 55 to 75 years of Steve Jobs might have been. We got no Act Three, and you can, and they talk about, how a truly great company, it lays out the things it needs to do, we'll wait to see whether the third of their criteria gets fit moving forward. It was fantastic. I was surprised by how taken by it I was, because normally I don't get into who's the COO of what or what stock price valuation, blah, blah, blah. It's very, very human though.
Yeah, highly recommend it. My pick, I am watching these very slowly because I don't want to consume them all and then be, I gotta wait a year for more. Daredevil.
Oh my gosh, I've only watched the first two, but I'm in and very excited about it. How far in are you?
And I don't know if I picked this last week either. I'm trying to remember because we talked about it. But I'm 3 or 4 episodes in. So I think I talked about the first one where the acting, it felt like a pilot where they were like the people that didn't have enough time to sort of find their pace for it. They've got it. You know, the guy who plays Foggy's doing a great job. I think everybody's on note. I think Charlie Cox's character is great. I think he's just hit it. And so, you know, it's you always want to give people room to get that thing right, which is, you know, you get that in TV. You don't get that in movies. And that's, you know, one of the things that, you know, why movies theoretically have a longer production time, et cetera. But
granted, I'm behind the curve. I'm only 2 episodes in, but I can't think of a weak character or weak. I think the only underdeveloped one is the chick who was a client that suddenly is working for them or whatever. That felt a little bit forced, but everything else, I think the guy who plays Matt Murdock is strong. I think Foggy is fantastic. I'm really,
it's exciting. I mean, what's so exciting about this is that, you know, the Marvel Cinematic Universe has been wonderful. Even the weakest films are eminently watchable. And, you know, Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. was for many, a profound disappointment.
Although I hear everybody tells me once you get to the part that crosses over with the Winter Soldier, it gets really, really good.
I know, and it's the same voices that, you know, have told me other things get better, and I believe that, yes, but considering where it started from, you know.
Well, I think Riley from Star Wars Report pointed out that it really is just like this unique geekdom kind of argument that, like, well, no, just wait until season 4, episode 5. Like, it gets really great at season 4, episode 5.
That's what people tell me about
the turning point.
Because it's one of the things where, like, sometimes, like, people have people think something won't work, and people will think that, like, I watched a criticism of like Star Wars Rebels, and somebody said, "Well, the lightsabers are too thick." and you're like, "And I really enjoy Star Wars Rebels. It's fun. It's written for 10-year-olds. That's the audience, but I enjoy it too." And you get into these things like, "Yeah, they shouldn't have changed the mask for so and so." It's like, no, that's not what's wrong here. And sometimes people can't put it. And so here, again, maybe it's great. This is like Gilmore Girl. She's so alone on this airplane. And I'm like, I'm just not into this. Peggy Carter, Agent Carter, fun. Really, really fun. Really thought it was fun. I haven't finished it yet, but I watched most of it.
I thought the pilot really was great.
Really well done. I said, this gives me hope. Then all of a sudden, when we heard Netflix is doing Marvel, like, is this going to be like low budget sort of, you know? I think, given the resources of what they did, I think they knocked it out of the park so far with Daredevil. I think it's the best TV property we've ever seen of a superhero. Best superhero TV property ever.
Wow. Full stop. Wow. That's great.
There's not a lot to compare it to, though, for TV properties.
I mean, unless, you know, The Incredible Hulk.
Which was The Fugitive with a green guy.
But then again, Daredevil is just it's Law and Order with a guy who kicks ass blind.
No, I mean, literally, Hulk was The Fugitive. It was.
Oh, yeah. No. I'm aware. But, I mean, it's like that's what's great about Daredevil is that they're making it a really good crime or you know,
trial. How far into this are you?
Crap. I'm only 2 episodes in. Sorry. Yeah, I bow to your...
We'll see. Maybe. Yeah. Maybe. You might be right. But, yeah. And so knowing that they're doing, you know, more of these in the Netflix, and it's part of the MCU, is exciting. And then thinking, you know, well, now we have the Star Wars thing and we have a fun cartoon show. And, you know, I don't think we're going to see Lucas's Star Wars Underworld or whatever, but I would love it. You know, I love the fact that Ronald D. Moore was brought into that originally to do that. So there are some really great TV people out there. We've seen some amazing science fiction on TV from Serenity or from Firefly, Battlestar Galactica. Knowing that there are some talented people and capable ones out there that could be involved and pulled into some sort of television project that we might get, I kind of bring it back to Star Wars. We might get more of that. But again, Daredevil, I'm thrilled. I'm excited where television's going. Or video.
Can I make a guess as to what Justin's pick is going to be?
You can't.
I mean, you know, I'd say it's the elephant of the room, but I ain't never seen an elephant in Westeros. So I guess it's got to be.
Oh, no. Listen, it's Game of Thrones, which is kind of going to be the reason why I'm going to have to peace out after the podcast, because I got to get to my buddy's house to watch Game of Thrones tonight. But it's not. I mean, what can you say about Game of Thrones? It's the best. It's the best ever. Yeah. You know, like, I'm sorry. You know, I was on Veronica Belmont tweets out, hey, what'd you guys think of Game of Thrones? And some dude, and I'm like, it's perfection. It's the best thing I've ever seen.
Hey,
I'm,
what do you guys think of sex?
It's great. I love it.
Well, there was one time I had hoped to orgasm like two or three times, but it only happened once. You know, it's not as good as the other times I've had sex.
It's just a table setting episode. All these characters just doing the same things they were doing before. Oh, you mean when they were the most compelling show on television? I almost cursed because I'm so mad about this. Like, no, shut your mouth. You better be quiet or else it'll go away and it'll be your fault.
I get like, what's your favorite show? Like, I'm like, Game of Thrones is the best show ever. Really? No, it is the best show ever existed. It is just, there is just
by all objective measures, yes.
Yeah, you know, if there is a way to measure things, it is Game of Thrones.
And listen, I've read all the books. I've read the chapters that George R. R. Martin's put on his blog. I this is a better version of that story, and I'm excited to see where it goes. And if anybody who's watched the first four episodes on the torrents have anything to say about it, like, seriously, shut your mouth.
Yeah, shut your mouth.
Because also I know what's happening, so I guess you can't really spoil it for me. But, like, it's amazing. It's awesome. It's the best. It's not my pick.
What's your pick?
Here's my pick. You can right now, if you go on Amazon.com, you can pre-order the sequel to the book you can pre-order the book, Name of the Devil, the sequel to the Jessica Blackwood novel, The Angel Killer, written by co-host of this very show, Andrew Main.
There's no cover.
The cover is brand new. I have – oh, crap. I don't know if I have it on me. I think it's in my other bag. I have the cover. It is on Andrew's Instagram, I believe. Right, Andrew? You put the cover on the Instagram?
Oh, wait. How about this? How about the cover's in your face right now,
oh,
sir?
There we go.
Yeah.
So there we go. That's what it looks like. It will be up on Amazon soon. But guess what? If you go on Amazon right now, even with the placeholder cover, you go ahead and plunk down your hard-earned dollars, you're going to get the sequel to the Jessica Blackwood series that was started so fantastically. And let me just tell you this. I have not read the final form. I have read an early version of Name of the Devil. I am I'm trying to split my time between that and another Andrew project that I need to read. But it is exceptional. If you really, really dug Angel Killer, then you are really going to dig this. And I know there were some people who really dug in Angel Killer some of the morbid brutality for which the antagonist lays upon an unsuspecting world. I will guarantee you that in the first 20 pages of Name of the Devil, at least the version that I read, there is a scene that is more viscerally gripping than any scene in Angel Killer.
Hey, can I throw something out there right there? Because I know there's a lot of people that are like, oh, I like Andrew Main and I like his books, and I definitely intend to buy it when it comes out or whatever. Let me tell you something. It definitely matters. Pre-orders are like a rubber band being pulled tight that snap on the day that they are released. If you dig Andrew Main as a person and you want to see him hit, I don't know, maybe the New York Times bestseller list, then vote now, buy it right now. And be there the day it comes out, and it'll snap right to.
And believe me, we'll be hyped.
On my website. And if you right now, if you pre-order and send proof of purchase to Bourbon Street Books at HarperCollins, which it could just mean like, hey, I bought it, you know, wherever, they'll send you a book comes out July 7th, but they'll send you an excerpt from the book
right away.
And not only that, get the book, sign up for our mailing list. There is a Jessica Blackwood short story that takes place between Angel Killer and the Name of the Devil that will be coming out very, very soon.
Sweet.
And, oh, that's rad. Have I read that? A short story?
I don't know.
I don't think I have. That sounds like new to me. Mm. So there we go. Name of the Devil. Go ahead and check that out. Amazon.com, probably the easiest place to buy it.
Yeah.
How's Although HarperCollins loves it when you buy it directly from them.
HarperCollins.com.
If you buy $49 worth of books or more, you get free shipping.
Yeah.
Not so much.
No, go ahead and check it out. It is super rad, and I'm pumped to read the final form.
And I am there. It's funny because I don't want to spoil it because there's so many things in there that when I first wrote this have become so topical now.
Oh, really? So yeah, they're prescient, and all of a sudden you're ahead of the curve.
Oh, yeah.
All right. Oh, no. Let me guess.
You have a soccer ball droid that nobody believes is real, but then it rolls out on stage, and J.J. Abrams goes, ah, look, it's real.
Pretty much that. I have, like, you know, like just yesterday there was stuff on the Drudge Report, which is all like, I'm like, wow, this is, anyhow. All right,
save it. I want to go in.
No, I'll tell you what, I read that book not having a full understanding of where some of those elements were pulled from and only to read news stories being like, oh, wow, look, that's a real thing. That's an actual, oh, look, I thought it was just one of those amazing Andrew creations on something that could happen. No, it's for real. And understand this is a, if you enjoyed the cat and mouse relationship of Jessica Blackwood and the antagonist, if you have not read Angel Killer, this takes that and expands it to a universe beyond where you might think that the boundaries of that first book are drawn. It just makes the world so much bigger and shows you so much more of Jessica Blackwood's character. What I'm trying to say is that it's better than every book ever written. So buy it now.
Right on.
Check is in the mail. Gentlemen, it's been wars.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.